Welcome everybody to a new edition of Attitude Wrestling Radio, and I will tell you why it's a new edition. Because first is, this show is now brought to you in part by Pro Wrestling Live. It's a wrestling company that pretty much picked our show up and podcasting it. So, for more information on Pro Wrestling Live, go to ProWrestlingLive.net. So what's your feeling about that, man? We got actually picked up by a wrestling company.
Oh, that's sweet, man. I'm very excited about that. The possibilities of wrestling probably make this show go to places where we haven't been before. So that's really, really cool.
Now, just to let everybody know, there'll be some changes. A lot of changes, obviously. We have a new website. This is going to be podcasting now, so people can't call in, but they can... definitely more than welcome email us at attitudewrestlingradio@hotmail.com at any time, and I'm the one that moderates the emails, and I'll get back to you guys, and if it's a really good question, we'll just put it on air when we're on. And also, this podcast won't have a beginning, like music or anything, till next week, because I got somebody that's actually going to do it for us and stuff.
That's going to be sweet.
Well, the guy that I know, he's pretty good with that stuff. Like, he'll put like Homer Simpson on and just make it fun and stuff, and that's what we're all about, is fun.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Exactly. And also, before we start running down the news of the week and stuff, we do have a legend. When I mean legend, I literally mean legend. Like, if you're talking about, like, old school wrestling, and you're talking about who would be the best, like, old school, I would have to say our guest tonight, Ivan Koloff.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, you know, because obviously he was back where it all started, back in the, you know, the pre-WWE/F days, and he's going to be one that I'm sure everybody's going to know, and we'll know when it's all, you know, the show's over.
Exactly, and he was the one that actually beat Bruno Sammartino for the title. And I remember seeing that match 100 times, and when I did, it was just like everybody in that arena was so quiet that you could actually drop a pin drop and you can hear it perfectly all around the arena.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that was back before my time. I was born 4 years after that match. But yeah, I mean, you know, I've read about it, and I've actually saw glimpses of the match. That is definitely one for the ages right there, that's for sure.
He's amazing. Like, sure, you had Bruno Sammartino, but he did the unthinkable, and back then there was a couple unthinkable things, but not like that. That's like, I don't know, like almost as bad as like, or worse than, say, I don't know, Hulk Hogan was undefeated, and all of a sudden he gets defeated, because Hogan back then was actually, back in the 80s, it was the biggest thing going.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, our guest was the big dog, you know, that rang amongst your Rocky Maivias, your Captain Lou Albano's, your George Animal Steels. I mean, there were some definitely guys that hung out with, or shoulder to shoulder with, you know, that made a serious impact on our business.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. We'll talk more about Ivan Koloff in a bit and stuff. Let's get to the news. I got one little update here about Triple H, because I do I answer people's question on formspring.com or something like that. I can't remember the website. But everybody's asking me, where's Triple H? Well, here's the answer. Triple H is currently doing public service announcements for Muscular Dystrophy Association. He has been working with the group for a while now. And also, he's finishing his movies. Or his movie that he's supposed to make.
Obviously, he needs to hurry up and come on back before the time he returns to the company. There, A, will be a hostile takeover, right? And he'll walk right into the thick of things, or, you know, there might be nothing at all left standing. If these seven guys have something to say about it.
Exactly. Apparently, him and Taker are supposed to be back at their SummerSlam.
Yeah. SummerSlam, huh? Now, hopefully it'll be a little bit before that, you know, but you never know. I mean, because obviously we got a pay-per-view coming up. It's going to be later on, which will be Hell in a Cell. It's going to be in Dallas, which is obviously Undertaker's old stomping ground. And a lot of us would love to see, you know, the hometown boy return, you know, even though he's billed from Houston. But he, you know, was obviously part of the World Class Championship Wrestling days back in the day, wrestling out as the Punisher, taking on the Von Erichs. Especially everybody remembers that match that he had with, you know, Kerry Von Erich. You know, it was like the battle of who was the biggest and the baddest. I mean, you can still find that match on YouTube today. That's still, when you watch it, it's like, it's wow, you know. And then they also had Bruiser Brody taking on Texas Red, which was, you know, Taker's first name when he started out. And even though Taker was just about the same height as Bruiser Brody, it's, you can tell, obviously, who was the biggest and baddest and who dominated, you know. So, I mean, too bad he's not alive to take on Taker as to try to challenge for that undefeated streak at WrestleMania, because that would be one I would love to see.
That would definitely be something else. In a good way. There's a press release actually sent out today about WWE Money in the Bank. It's a pretty long one, so I'll try to get to it as fast as I can. It's a special appearance by Typhoon and WWE Money in the Bank viewing party Sunday, July 18, 2010 at Mardi Gras Casino, Hallandale Beach, Florida. And, yeah, apparently they're going to have Typhoon back. Apparently he's making his media comeback.
Yeah, I think they got it on Where Are They Now on their page. Typhoon's listed on there. And from what I can tell, either he's in a construction business or he owns his own construction business. I know he's got signs just about as big as him, so who knows? I mean, but that would definitely be great to, you know, see him come back and stuff. Wouldn't mind seeing him do that big old splash of his, or even squeeze somebody with the big old arms that he used to do when he was wrestling as a Shockmaster back in the day.
His Shockmaster was actually Earthquake.
No. It was Typhoon. If you remember, when he made his debut as a Shockmaster, he tripped and fell, and the helmet came off. Well, later on, when Shockmaster came back out, the way they had it was he was wearing a construction hat and a white shirt, and he was actually teaming up in it was one of those steel cage matches where he actually made Booker T submit with a bear hug.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Earthquake, when he came in there, first came in as Avalanche, then he became the Shark, and then he became John Tenna. Yeah, I know my history of the big man, especially since I'm so close to Earthquake, literally, you know, so that's I definitely know my history about that.
Yeah, I never watched much WCW.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched all phases, you know, from, like I said, the WCCW to the WCW, you know, your NWA before that, you know, to WWF and so on, you know, anybody I can... The AWA, I think, was another one, too, I used to watch, and you can still kind of watch on ESPN, so that's always, you know, good to catch up with and refreshing your memory, because that's also where Sergeant Slaughter, you know, really made his Impact felt was the AEW days, as well as the Road Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. I actually got the AWA DVD, and it's pretty good. Like, they explain, like, how, like, the rest, like, the bit, like, the wrestlers that went from AWA to WWE, they explain how they did it and what happened and stuff. So that was pretty cool DVD.
I also got some little news too from there. I got a little source, you know, which is WrestlingRadio.com. They were saying that Tommy Dreamer is now officially working for TNA. And he actually, he's got creative control of his character. He's already started cracking the whip. He wants less of Rob Terry, Orlando Jordan, and Rosie Lala-Love, and wants the return of Daniels and Alicia Flash. He also wants the X Division to have more international feel to it, and has asked Hogan Steen to take the Undertaker-type schedules, which means barely be seen. And, you know, Steen, as you know, recently got this suspended for 30 days, and, you know, who knows where that's going to lead, because he is also saying, why don't you make it permanent? You know, he's what he told Dixie, you know, when he was getting escorted out of the building, so who knows how that's going to unfold, but it's interesting that they gave Tommy Dreamer, you know, control like that. I mean, that makes you think as well. So it wasn't TNA that came up with the idea of putting him in kick pads and putting him in kind of like Tank Abbott type gear. That was his own, I assume.
Exactly. That's actually good news. Tomorrow night's Impact preview. Tomorrow night's Impact broadcast, we will see TNA World Heavyweight Champion Rob Van Dam wrestle Samoa Joe in a non-title match. Other matches advertised for the event include AJ Styles versus Kazarian, and X Division Champion Douglas Williams versus Generation Me member Jeremy in a ladder match.
Well, that's just a slight preview of what we're going to be in store for July 11th, which everybody knows is Victory Road. And that's the one I want to talk about, you know, because that is a very, very solid list of matches right there, you know, from obviously, you know, you got the challenge match where you get Ric Flair taking on Jay Lethal, and a lot of people tell me, do you really want to see Ric Flair wrestle again? And I'm like, well, no, but at the same time, you know, he's been wrestling on Hogan's tour before they signed with TNA, so, you know, everybody been wanting to see what it's like to have, you know, Ric Flair, which is, you know, the original, and then taking on Jay Lethal, you know, which is the young and up-and-coming talent. So that ought to be a good one, believe it or not, if there's not interference on Ric Flair's behalf.
What's your prediction on that one?
Well, like I said, if somebody comes and interferes on Ric Flair's behalf, you know, you have to lean toward Ric Flair. But, you know, Jay Lethal, though, has been on a roll. He's beaten just about everybody he's been in the ring with, you know, including this past weekend was, you know, over Morgan, you know, thanks to Hernandez's assist, but still. So, if I had to, you know, call it right down the middle, I would say Jay Lethal.
Same here. I actually agree with you on that one, as long as there's no buddy interfering.
Then we got the Contenders Battle, which is the one I think is probably going to be one of the best. You got the number 10, Kurt Angle, taking on the Pope, you know, who's ranked number 8. And obviously, Kurt said he's going to go through them all, starting from the bottom to get up to the top so he, you know, go after the world title again. And this is one where I definitely think it's going to be one of the, you know, one of the matches of the night. Because Kurt Angle, you know, told Pope straight up that, you know, I got to win this match or my career is over. So I think with that being said, the tournament Kurt Angle is, that Kurt Angle wins, you know, with an ankle lock, you know, or the clamp, whatever you want to call it, wherever he drops his weight, wraps his, you know, stuff around the leg and just drops down. If he hits that on the Pope, it's over with it.
Yeah, I think the Pope's going to win on this one.
I don't know if Kurt Angle will be gone that fast, but maybe. Maybe you're right. Who knows? And then, of course, one of the matches that really intrigued me, obviously, is Matt Morgan versus Hernandez in a steel cage. Now, that is going to be probably a match, I would say, that's very similar, you know, to like a Kane versus Batista type match, because both of these guys are powerhouses. Both of these guys, you know, are willing to fly, either coming off the top rope or, you know, jumping clotheslines, or even the boots, you know, the running boots, you know, and it's like, man, you know, you got two guys that practically marry each other, except for, of course, Matt Morgan's got about, what, 3 feet? No, not 3 feet. Oh, it's about 2 feet height over Hernandez, at least, or somewhere close to. So, I think I'm going to lean toward Hernandez, though, because if Hernandez gets that a splash from the top rope, or even, you know, hitting his sit-down power bomb, you know, I think he'll be all open for
the blueprint. I agree with you. I think it's going to be Hernandez just for a payback for what Matt Morgan did to him.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be one that I would say that's probably going to end up being the third or fourth best match of the night. You know, with I'm putting Kurt Angle and the Pope up there, you know, dangerously close to number two. And then, of course, you got the Ultimate X match for the X Championship match, where you got win by either submission or claiming the Ultimate X, where you got Brian Kendrick versus Douglas Williams. Now, Douglas Williams has got tremendous height over Kendrick, but as you can tell, they've been giving Kendrick a push quite of late, where he's been getting victories by submission as of late. Of course, who knows if he's going to be able to slap it on Doug Williams for the title. But I don't think he'll probably get Doug Williams to submit, but I do believe that he'll probably get the Ultimate X at the top of the cage. So I'm going to lean toward Kendrick getting the title.
I agree with you there. And one of the reasons, because they haven't really done anything with Williams with the title.
I mean, I think, you know, it would be funner, you know, to have, I guess that's the word, well, funner, to have Williams chase after Kendrick for the title and be the one to pursue the title, because with Williams just having it and taunting it in front of Kendrick like a rat does, like you would do a rat, you know, chasing after the cheese there, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, Kendrick can only, you know, chase after this guy for so long, you know, so I think it would just make more sense if Kendrick takes the belt, and that way you got Williams, you know, chasing after him and trying to get that belt back. And, of course, if Kendrick wanted to, you know, because right now I think he's still a heel. But, you know, if the fans get behind him, that's one thing. But, you know, this guy could also, you know, do the old thing, the Ravishly Rick Rude way of keeping the belt by getting himself disqualified or getting himself counted out. He could actually hang on the belt for quite a while if he was smart.
Exactly. I would like to see Kendrick win the title because WWE never really did anything with him. The biggest thing I believe they did with him was when he teamed up with Paul London.
Yeah, they gave him the belts for a little bit at least, but it wasn't that much. And speaking of tag team belts, we got the TNA World Tag Team Championship going on, where you got the Beer Money versus the Motor City Machine Guns. And, you know, obviously whoever wins this match will become the new tag team champions. And Beer Money has been multiple champions. I'm not sure if Motor City Machine Guns have had the titles yet, have they?
What's that, sorry? You were breaking
up a bit. Beer Money has had the titles before, but the Motor City Machine Guns, have they had the titles before?
I could be wrong. I could be very, very wrong, but I think they did, but a very, very short period.
Well, I'm going to say the Motor City Machine Guns, they get that sweet finisher now. As you can tell that they did this past weekend on Jesse Neal, which was obviously that power bomb, sit-down power bomb slash, you know, backflip, whatever you call the thing. But it was like a sweet move, though. And just to see that, I mean, obviously, if they get that on one of the beer money, it's over with. So I'm going to lean towards the Motor City Machine Guns winning the tag team belts.
I got to go away from you, and I'm going to have to... And I'm going to say Beer Money, just because they're so good together. And I've always thought that TNA underutilized them, even when they did have the belts.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then, of course, we got Angelina Love versus Madison Rayne for the TNA Knockout Championship.
Angelina Love. Sorry for interrupting, but it's Angelina Love, because I got a funny feeling. I didn't watch TNA this week, but or last week I should say, but I think it was the week before they showed a tease of Velvet Sky breaking up with the Beautiful People.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say Madison Rayne. The only reason why is because as of late, whenever she gets that move, which is basically like a swinging, swinging neck twist into the back of her knee, I mean, if she was to hit that on Angelina Love, I think it would be over with. So I'm going to go with her because she's the champion and she's been keeping it all this time. But, you know, you might be right. And again, you might be wrong. And then we got the match, Triple Threat. We got Brother Ray versus Jesse Neal versus Brother D.Va. Now, this is one that obviously is, you can see coming more and more that D.Va has been trying to stop Ray from interfering with Jesse's matches and causing him to lose matches the title shot, obviously, that they had lined up when it looked like they won the match. So I would say that there could be a chance where either D.Va can win it, because obviously Brother Ray's going to be so focused on Jesse Neal and vice versa that, you know, while one of them is like beating up on the other and one of them gets knocked out of the ring, leaving one standing there, you know, Brother D.Va can come behind and hit his neck breaker or roll him up for a pin and steal the victory that way. Or, you know, maybe they mentally toss out Jesse Neal outside the ring, and then face-to-face, you would have Brother Ray versus Brother Devon right there, which is one I think everybody wants to see, because I think it's only been done once, you know, back when Devon was doing his Reverend impersonation, you know, remember when he brought out Dave Bautista and had Deacon Bautista first, you know.
Yeah, so, I remember that clearly.
Yeah, so I think, you know, that might be something that we might see again, but, or it could end in just a cluster.
I'm going to go on surfing and shopping. I'm going to go off limits here, and I'm going to say that I can see Jesse Neal winning. But when after he wins, like, I don't know, maybe gets too cocky and jumps around and stuff, and Brother D.Va and Bubba Ray will, like, say, like, we're tired of being treated, blah, 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 and then end up happening that the new ECW stable, I guess so to say, will end up being all together.
Yeah, that could be the case. You never know. I mean, I've seen an interview, though, with Brother Ray, basically last week or the week before, where he was saying that he thinks that Jesse Neal and D.Va's head both are very, very huge right now, and that both of them obviously are jealous of him, and that, you know, he was saying for 15 years that he thinks he would be champion right now. If he was on his own, he would do better on his own. So that makes you wonder, either A, does he really actually mean that? Or B, is this something that's just been boiling up all this time? You know, because obviously they have multiple championships being as a tag team. So, you know, that remains to be seen. But it's just still kind of funny how of both Dudleys, or all the Dudleys, that there was only one Dudley that ever got a world title shot, and that was, you know, Spike, or Brother Run. You know, he's the only one that's ever got a title shot over the last couple of years that I remember, so.
Exactly. What's the next match?
And the final one is obviously the one I think is going to be the match of the night, which is going to be Mr. Anderson versus Jeff Hardy versus Abyss versus Rob Van Dam for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. Now, that one could go either way. I mean, some people, you know, are saying Abyss. Some people are saying Hardy, because if RVD was going to lose the belt, I think this is the only way that it would actually happen, because that way he can turn around and say, hey, I'm the champion, but I wasn't the one that got pinned. It was such and such that got pinned. You know, I never lost the belt. I want my rematch. And then again, I was thinking that Jeff Hardy could actually probably hit the, you know, the swanton on Abyss or RVD. Anderson comes in there, tosses, you know, Hardy outside of the ring and sells a victory that way and becomes the world champion. I mean, either way, you know, it can go either way. You just don't know how to really call that right down the middle, you know, because I have two in my mind that I think will win, but you can't really say just one. That's only the bad part. It's like, So I'm going to say either Jeff Hardy or Mr. Anderson. It's one of those two guys I think will win the belt.
I'm going to go out fetch here, and I'm going to say Abyss. Just because he's got the... I can see them putting the title on Abyss, which it wouldn't be a good move personally. But the reason why is because Hogan's obviously one of the leaders, right, of the company, or at least on air. And I can see... And Abyss and Hogan don't like each other anymore. So I can see them putting the title on Abyss, and Hogan... This may sound like a little... Like... turning towards a heel, but Hogan will try to do his best to get all different competitors to try and beat Abyss, but he just won't do it.
Yeah, that could be a possibility, but this past Thursday on Impact, you know, Eric Bischoff, Dixie Carter, and Hogan were talking about that this is a cancer and they really need to get rid of this guy, which is something that sounded eerily similar to what they said about Sting. And, I don't think they would, you know, let Abyss win the title. And if not, I would think that either, you know, Eric or Hogan would probably send somebody out there to make sure that didn't happen. But
right.
I'm just very curious about what they're going to do with Kevin Nash, because Kevin Nash stepped into the room, was going to talk to them, but he said, can you give us a minute? And he stepped back out. I mean, there's ever since the band broken up, Kevin Nash has really had nothing to really do. I mean, what better way to start a feud and having, you know, that Kevin Nash take on Abyss. And, you know, the only time I've ever seen Abyss and Kevin Nash step in the ring, somebody usually turned around and did something to Abyss where all Nash had to do was lay down and cover him 1, 2, 3. I mean, I wanted Nash to get in there and do the jackknife on this man, because I know he can do it, and actually make a serious impact and earn that money, you know. So, like I say, it could go either way. You never know.
Exactly. Not to cut things short, but we got two more big news. We're going to go through it quickly, because in a couple minutes we will have Ivan Koloff on here. One of the other news is former WWE performer Jimmy Wang Yang cryptically noted on his Twitter account yesterday that he has signed a contract with an organization that he wrestled for in the past. In quote, signed a contract for my next big wrestling adventure, Yang wrote. And then after it says, give you guys a little clue, I have wrestled for them in the past. It said that Yang signed with TNA Wrestling. He was previously worked for the organization during its primitive stages in 2002.
Well, I don't know what organization that was, do you?
I'm going to have to go with this one and say TNA.
Possibility. But I could have swore somewhere I read that the NA wasn't interested in signing him, so I don't know.
Yeah, but no offense or nothing, but isn't that like every wrestler that says, I'm not interested in signing with so-and-so, next thing you know, or most wrestlers, next thing you know, you actually see them in the company?
I'm also reading another thing that's pretty interesting, go off subject just a little bit. It's more of the general manager on WWE, if we can talk about them for a second. It's kind of funny how they're teasing that it appears like it's Steve Austin as the general manager. But it says, Austin tweeted something that was kind of interesting. Basically, that he tweeted during Raw, but didn't last long. However, he wrote the following after the show, busy all day, folks, working on a project to be shot in Vancouver in a few weeks. More details later. Gotta hit the hay. Good night. So obviously fans bombarded Austin's account with comments about him being the general manager and the teasers on Raw. Austin replied, I miss it, but it sounds like it was just an interesting Raw. So clearly, you know, it was probably just something that they put out there to make people think it's Austin, but it's probably not.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, just to throw people off. Because I think there's too many rumors going around on the internet, as we know, as always. And a lot of people mention some, like mentioned J.R., Abraham Washington. They won't have no actual general manager till possibly late in August, when possibly Bret Hart comes back. Michael Cole was another name. There were so many names, and I think that somebody might have hit it right on, so they had to do it so that way, you know, try to get their minds off it. But I personally still think it's Abraham Washington. Unfortunately, I do not want to see this guy as a general manager, because I have seen him before in ECW, and I do not want to see him. I'd rather see Jim Ross or someone like that.
Yeah. Well, who knows? I just know that this general manager, though, did make a match where you had Nexus versus John Cena coming up next Monday. And even though Cena took it upon himself to take out one of them, as most saw at the end of the show on Raw, it makes me think that, yeah, if Cena was smart, he would knock off each one of them, you know, all the way down until he gets to Wade Barrett. So that way, you know, when the main event rolls around, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be the main event, he'll just have to face Wade Barrett because everybody else would be taken down. So that's what I can't wait for. Especially, you know, when as mad and angry as Cena was at the end of the show. You know, who knows?
Exactly. At this time, I'd like to welcome our guest when the name legend has been thrown around, but when we talk about true legend, this man is a true legend, the one, the only, Ivan Koloff. Ivan, how are you this evening?
I am blessed, comrade. Very good, very good. Hey, comrade, remember I asked you to do a survey and find a wrestling partner for me because I'm coming back into action? I don't want no American wrestler now. You have to find me a good Russian athlete to take Nikita's place because we got to pave the road to Moscow and goal again. Did you do it?
I will try my best.
I caught you unaware there, right?
Well, definitely, because I was wondering, like, he didn't ask me that today.
Yeah.
To get going, how did you get into pro wrestling?
How did I get into it?
Yeah.
It's got a story, really. I tell a lot of these stories in my book, you know. There's that wrestling fake, you know, by Scott Teal, who wrote the book about 3 years ago. But the way I explain it, and it's the way it happened, I had a dream to be a wrestler, not a physical dream, but watching wrestling on TV at 8 years old. We didn't have TV ourselves, and Mom and Dad took me and the kids, 10 kids, you know, loaded up and went over to a friend's place and had this of a screen box TV type thing, and oh, we're tickled that the program that really made wrestling in the beginning was wrestling, made TV, I should say, was wrestling, and that's what was on that night, and oh, I fell in love with it. I wanted to be a wrestler, and I kept that dream from 8 years old, and drove my brothers and sisters crazy, trying to wrestle them all the time, and being the middle child, of course, it, I got some pretty good whooping sometimes, you know, with the bigger ones, you know, but ended up going to a wrestling school at just turning 19 years old. I was 18, but turned 19, and 6 months later, I built myself up, gained about 50 pounds of body weight, pushing weights. I was really serious. I tried hard, force-feed myself, took extra protein drinks, and work out hard at the weights. But while I worked in, I had a job at the Stelco Steel Company in Hamilton, Ontario, and I all went crazy. I just ended up gaining the weight I needed, and he was impressed, Jack Wentworth, the trainer, and he started me wrestling locally, you know, TV shot, Toronto TV, Hamilton TV, Pittsburgh TV, and here and there, you know, local shots. And that was pretty well my start.
Nice, nice. When you were growing up watching wrestling, who was your idol?
Oh, without a doubt, Bruno Sammartino was the guy that I took as being, you know, was my hero, and I wanted to pattern myself after. Really was in awe about him. They, you know, they announced him, he just became champion. He was debuted in the late 50s and early 60s, 63, he won the belt. And I remember watching him on TV just before he won the belt, you know. They're showing him, Brucci, Italy, 290-pound strong man, Bruno Sammartino. And I said, oh, man, I'd like to be just like that, you know, big, strong guy that people all like, you know, and everything. And ended up, although I had a lot of other wrestlers that I enjoyed watching and liked, the old names of wrestling that probably a lot of people won't even remember or know about, like Billy O. DiPaolo, Whipper Billy Watson, guys like him, Bulldog Brower, Igor, and I got to wrestle all those guys later on, and so that was quite a thrill for me, you know, to be able to do that. But I guess Bruno would be my main guy as far as hero in the business I looked up to, you know.
Nice. When you wrestled Bruno for the title, and when you actually won, and I remember because I see that match all the time because I love that match. How was it like winning the title against your idol and knowing that he was like back then he was like the biggest guy ever, like popular wise?
Really, something that's really made me nervous, to say the least, even though I had about 9 years of experience under my belt by this time, starting around 62 being a pro, and by this time it was 71, I ended up winning the belt from him, but I had wrestled him through 1969, for about 8 months, 10 months, all around the territory, you know, 3 or 4 times in all the large coliseums. And, I get some victories, but only by, situation type thing. And, but I never could get the title, so my time was up. I left. I had a trip to Australia for 10 weeks, Hawaii after that. I was realizing, got a call to come back and fill in to wrestle against Bruno. I don't know if it was somebody hurt or what, but I think Bruno was hurt at the time, and he was still getting in the ring, and he needed a rest after 7.5 years of being champion. So when I was a belt, I, you know, made plans and came back, and was really taking excitement, you know, a sellable crowd. And think it was like 22,000 people at Maple Leaf, or at the Madison Square Gardens, and I could tell that the people loved Bruno. They were cheering every chance they got for it. If he threw a punch or anything like that, they'd start cheering. And of course, I could tell they were like, oh, who is this guy? Like, is he really going to take it from Bruno? He was here before. He didn't win the belt, but what's he doing? You know, what's going on, you know? And got the 1-2-3, and oh, the people went quiet. You could, like you say, hear a pin drop. I thought there was something wrong. I thought that, oh, man, did I mess up or something, or cameras break, or referee changed his mind or something. And I got up, raised my hand, and said, where's the belt? You know, because I realized I won. And he was saying, don't go back to the dressing room. Go back to the dressing room. I think the people are going to riot. He thought they were so upset. Bruno was indeed a hero and still is a legend of wrestling, you know, with the New York area and WWF. And the old fans remember. They remember back in those days because there was such a big following for Bruno. He was the man, you know. But it was indeed exciting. And it really did something for my career. It put me on the map, you might say, and really gave me credibility. And wherever I called to go into wrestle, I say, yeah, of course, you know, I was in all the magazines, wrestling magazines, so they would negotiate with me. So it was a blessing for me, for sure.
Did Vince McMahon ever approach you at any time to possibly go into the WWE Hall of Fame?
No. I don't know what the situation is there. You know, I know there's a lot of videos out, DVDs, me with being the champions of the WWE video, me being on the first match, get beat by Pedro Morales, and I'm on the cage match DVD, and they showed me a lot, ESPN 24/7. I don't know if Vince feels that, you know, subconsciously or consciously, the idea of on his mind that he really owes me some royalties for this because he pays other guys or he's paying other guys royalties and he's never paid me any. So maybe he feels that if he calls me to be in the Hall of Fame that he'll have to pay me back those royalties. And I guess that's why he's a millionaire. He's a shrewd guy. So maybe that's the reason. I don't know. I don't think we ever had a run-in as far as clash of personalities or an argument or anything like that. Last time I was there, I wrestled Bob Backlund, and before I left, they had me booked on a Middle East tour for a week and a half. Went over there, came back, finishing up my little gig in New York, and they asked me, Junior asked me actually, to stay longer. And I told him, I said, I'd love to, but man, I got a situation, I've got a knee. It's cartilage is tore, and I've got to get it taken care of. It's, I don't know if that made him upset, thinking I was making an excuse and didn't want to come in and, you know, stay for him or what, but I don't think so, though. So who knows? But he's never called. And, I've put the word out there that I'd be interested, you know, so I don't know what the problem is. Maybe he's waiting to save a payday by waiting till I die so he can honor me in the Hall of Fame after I'm gone.
Vince seems to want to do that a lot.
Well, sorry,
go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it just seems like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially with a lot of these older guys.
Yeah.
A lot of people say wrestling is more fake now than what it was back then. Do you agree with that at all?
No, I don't know where people get the word fake, you know. And I'll give you a good analogy, like I say in my book, I wrote why I named my book, Is That Wrestling Fake? The analogy being Evil Knievel. Evil Knievel always do what he's... His bottom line was what he wanted to accomplish. He practiced what he wanted to accomplish. what difference is wrestling? I mean, if you know ahead of time what you're going to do or trying to do and you practice what you do, that's what wrestling is. But Evel Knievel, before he died, God bless him, he ended up, I understand, breaking just about every bone in his body, or a lot of bones anyway. And that's the same case with wrestling, even today. Okay, years ago it was left up to the wrestlers more in the ring. If I went in there with Bruno, it was like if I got along with him and we cooperated in some moves or something like that, that was one thing. I taught a mutual respect. If he didn't like me, and that was the case a lot of times, you guys didn't like each other, clash of personalities, or did you like the idea that this guy was a champion and had the belt, and you might want the belt from him because there's no more money back then in your payoff as far as if you were the champion, if you're the main event, and if you won your match. So the incentive was in place for you to try harder. So if we went out there, beat a guy, and you just go back to the dressing room and say to the promoter, I don't know, he's not feeling good tonight, I guess. He didn't kick out on two, so I had to beat him, you know. So nothing they could do about it, really, other than book a rematch. And, of course, if you pulled a fast one, the guy, if he was a tough guy, he'd come back and want to get a little revenge. But I think the difference probably is, since Vince Jr. took over, well, I know for a fact it is, and he's even admitted it, that when his dad died, he took over. He always wanted to be like a Hollywood producer, and indeed today he is. He produces different movies and such, the past with The Rock, with Stone Cold, and John Cena. But, I mean, just for the idea of him changing the wrestling, because he wanted to control things, predetermined thing. So now it's like all predetermined. He tells the guys what to say, what to do. Or they come up with, pretty well, more like a soap opera. So that part of it is different there, but you can't take it away from the fact that even though they know ahead of time what they're going to do, they're not doing some real dangerous things. You get on the top rope and you come off. Look at my good friend Ricky's the Dragon Steamboat. Just did it last week here. He just got out of the hospital. He just, I guess, getting out of the hospital. And now they thought he had a brain aneurysm, right? But they found out it was one of the, I guess, one of the veins in his head burst from a trauma blow to his head. So, I mean, even though the guys are, you know, cooperating in the ring so much and they're supposed to do this or do that, these guys are great athletes and some of them are really strong guys. And whenever you're doing something and you're making it look the part, looking good, people are going to get hurt. That's why Evel Knievel has all so many bones broke and so many wrestlers today and in my time. I'm sitting here right now with one shoulder has been broken and operated on. The other shoulder, rotary cup, complete, never operated on, but it's out of the socket, like it's like four, the rotary. My bicep and tricep on my left arm is broke. Three knee surgeries, ankle broke four times. I've had cracked ribs, many of them. I've had just as of late, starting in 73, I had a ruptured disc. I had another one in 85. I had one 2 years ago, and right now I'm suffering with a ruptured disc. So anybody who calls wrestling fake is just out of ignorance. They just don't really realize what they're saying. Just because something is predetermined doesn't make it fake. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of difference. You know, even these guys in the movies recognize that because they have stunt people, right? They end up saying, okay, this is a risky move this guy's got to do. Stuntman, step up here, and they have a guy looking like the actor, the main man, and they have him do the part so that if he gets hurt, well, he's paid for it. He paid good money to be the stuntman. They'll still have their main actor or actress in good shape, you know, so that they don't have to try to bring a stop to the production altogether. And it sort of irks me that people come up to me. You know, I explain it the same way to them whenever I'm out doing autographs for charity or whatever, and they come up with that. There's always this smart guy comes up and says, that wrestling's all fake, you know. And I say to them, well, man, why didn't you do it then? You know, if it was all fake, the guys that make millions of dollars a year, what you're telling me is you're not man enough to do that fake stuff, right? So I guess that's a good way to explain it. And I got to stick up for it. I got to stick up for it even nowadays, because I know what these young guys and older guys are going through doing what they do. I broke my ankle 3 times jumping off the top rope onto the floor. So that's required today. A lot of these guys are doing stuff like that. So, I mean, when you're breaking bones, man, there's nothing to be, demeanored in any way by trying to tell a guy just because you knew ahead of time he was going to do something. Those guys are told to go around the racetrack at 200 miles an hour and see who can get in there first. They know ahead of time what they're going to do. They're going to go around that track 200 miles an hour. But nobody tells them they might have a flat tire or somebody might bump them and wreck their car and, you know, them get killed or get really hurt bad. So, you know, I'm afraid, like any other active sport, including baseball, football, any of those sports, you can get hurt doing anything that's really limits, you know, the put strain on the body, you might say, doing something extraordinary. I hope I answered your question. I get carried away sometimes.
With me, I got my co-host, Darren. Darren, did you want to ask Ivan a couple questions?
Hey, Darren, how you doing,
brother? I'm doing well, bud. How you doing?
Great.
Okay, I got a couple of questions for you, if you don't mind, sir. First off, how did you get the nickname the Russian Bear?
I think the guy recognized me. See, I started off as an Irish guy, Red McNulty, back after the wrestling school. Matter of fact, Jack Wentworth in the wrestling school gave me that handle because I was, you know, I got up there around 265, 270. I had a whipped full head of hair, kind of a red tint to it, the beard and everything. I looked like an Irish guy, but that guy got beat up. And it stands to reason, you know, you go through the period of the amateur ranks, you might call it, or the learning stage, and I ended up doing that for 5-6 years until I got recognized in Japan by the promoter's brother from Montreal, Jacques Rougeau, and we became somewhat friends over there, and he looked one day and he said,
Well, obviously, speaking of your Irish character, okay, your Irish character, you were named Red McNulty, right? And you were built from Ireland, and you wrestled in the eye patch. Now, see, I'm an independent wrestler out here in the state of Texas, and it's hard wrestling in a mask because sometimes, yes, you can't see. I can't imagine wrestling in an eye patch. What was that like, you know, as that character, and having your eye covered with an eye patch, did it really affect your way of wrestling, or was it no big deal?
Hold on. We lost them by mistake here. Sorry, technical here.
Sorry about that, brother.
No problem. Go ahead, Devin.
They just looked at me as looking like Lenin. They thought I looked like the old leader of Russia, Lenin, years ago. And they said, come into Montreal and be a Russian. And at that point, I didn't know who I was going to be. I just said, yes, sir. And it was all willing. I ended up going to Montreal, and they gave me the handle. There used to be a guy wrestled, I guess, back in the 40s, 50s, by the name of Koloff, Dan Koloff. This is what they told me. And they thought I'd be good handle to be Ivan Koloff. So I went with it. Proved up to be good.
And going back to your Montreal days, okay, you defeated Johnny Russo in your, you know, for the IWA International Heavyweight title the following year. Is Johnny related to the Russo brothers, Chuck and Raymond?
He's like the uncle.
The uncle?
So Jacques Rougeau was Johnny's brother, and Jacques had a couple sons, Raymond and Jacques Rougeau Jr., right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess Johnny Rougeau would be the uncle, their uncle, like, you know.
Right, and then of course when you made, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. All right, and then obviously when you made your debut in the WWF in 1970, you were managed by Captain Lou Albano. So when that happened, obviously you know Captain Lou passed away earlier this year. What can you tell us about him as an individual? I mean, was he a good guy to be around?
Yeah, actually, originally I got in there in New York in 69 with Tony Angelo as my manager, the same manager I had in Montreal, and he had a family problem, had to go home. Captain Lou bought the contract, supposedly, and they had to be managed by him. Good guy. I liked Captain. Kind of wild, eccentric type of person, you know, the character, Captain Lou. He had been a good, great wrestler, the Assassin of Sicilians, you know, him and Tony Alfamore. Captain Lou, as a manager, was good because he had a gift of gab. You know, he liked to holler. He had a good little gimmick down the way he talked, and was ideal for me because it more or less what like Nikita and I did when we started, the little mystique of being me being quiet and Captain Lou do all the talking, just stand there with my arms folded. Same with Nikita whenever sort of mentors him at first, that until he's, you know, got comfortable with what he's doing and got some experience. The captain to me was a sweetheart of a guy. He was the type of guy, I mean, he throw back some beers, you know, and but he was the type of guy, always a laugh, you know, in the dressing room or after the matches or out partying or whatever, he's always a laugh. But one thing you didn't want to do around the captain is you didn't want to take God's name in vain around him. Oh, he'd tell anybody. He'd say, hey, that's all right, you know, no stoke taking God's name in vain. And I really admired that part of him to be that way, you know. Good guy, real good guy. I can't say enough good things about the captain. He was always there for me and always an asset for me in all my trips to New York and my wrestling up there.
All right, this is Attitude Wrestling Radio, and our special guest is Ivan Koloff. The next question I have for you is, obviously, you know, you've been in matches with, you know, Bob Backlund and Stan Hansen, right? And superstar Billy Graham and Pedro Morales. And obviously, when you won the title from Bruno San Martino and you lost it, you know, a couple of weeks later to him, what was wrestling Pedro like? Because obviously he's, I believe, a WWE Hall of Famer, which you should be up there with. What was wrestling that guy like?
Wrestling against Pedro, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, Pedro was a great wrestler, yeah. He had that quick-tempered type of personality, like, you know, he'd be out there and like a dynamo, that thing. And a big following, too, you know, being the Puerto Ricans, the Spanish the people, of course, pulled for Pedro, you know. He was good, you know. Kiddingly, I always say, well, I won the match against Bruno Perez, wherever that Pedro Morales had cheated me out of it, you know. But, yeah, he's good. Pedro Morales is always a real good wrestler in the ring. And I enjoyed work. I wish I could have worked more with him, you know, but my stay there was very short at that period. Originally, it was supposed to be at least for another year after even the title. That was by agreement, but I guess they wanted to put him against other guys, and I was supposed to come back, but it never worked out that I ever came back. But, yeah, I had some great talent to work with and against. Superstar Billy Graham, of course. I remember one match being him against Gorilla Monsoon and Haystack Calhoun. And so many other matches up in New York, Victor Rivera, of course, and Jay Strongbow, George Animal Steel's up there. Of course, I didn't go against him. We're both ugly guys, so they put us against each other. But, oh, yeah, I really had a good experience. I always got along pretty good with the guys that I end up wrestling against. I guess when you know you're not really that tough guy, you know, you don't grin and shoot your mouth out too much, you know.
Well, I think everybody respected me because they see that I was in good shape and I could go and wrestle 90-minute matches, 60-minute matches, and they wasn't one to blow up and, you know, complain or anything like that. So I think that I was respected for that reason. And all these other guys were talking about the same way. The guys back in those days prided themselves in not being afraid to work, the majority of them anyway. So I had matches, long matches, there's a lot of them, grueling matches and conditions that were inhuman, really, with the heat and the travel situation. You know, you had a big demand. You know, you had to be here and there and the next night, so it was rough.
So was Haystack Calhoun really as big as they say he was? Obviously, by the picture, that's a big boy, but how was he in person? I mean, obviously, they say he was a nice guy, but, you know, he was very, very big. So was he as intimidating in person as he is in pictures?
Well, he was intimidating because anybody's 600 pounds plus, and he was, you know, pretty tall, 6'4", 6'5", something like that, you know, carrying all that way. And he was pretty agile for a big man. He could get up and down pretty good, you know, which was really surprising. No, I liked Haystack. He got a little upset with me because that match at the Gardens, I went behind him real fast and yanked on his overalls and broke a strap, and he sort of tripped over me, and he was upset because he was ignoring of, the man that couldn't be taken off his feet, you know. It was hard to get him off his feet, and I tripped him up, and but I didn't figure he'd really mind. I mean, this was after I won the belt and lost it against Bruno and came back years later. And, I figured that, you know, with that type of reputation of being the champion at one time, the guy shouldn't be upset if you pick him off his feet, you know. But that's just the way his staff was. He's a good man. Good man. We visit with his daughter today. We see her once in a while at these fan fests and that. And she's a fine lady. Yeah, not bad to say about him at all. Met him when I was just a rookie as Red McNulty, so he was always nice to me.
All right, this is Attitude Wrestling Radio, and our special guest, Ivan Cola. My next question I have for you, obviously you were in several tag matches with Nikolai Volkoff. Have you ever crossed paths with Iron Sheik?
Oh, yeah. Of course, Iron Sheik and I were tagged up for a while down here in the National Wrestling Alliance. And we ended up going over to that tour to Kuwait, the Middle East, like I was telling you a while ago, after I wrestled Bob Backlund around New York. And, yeah, we had a little run-in with a situation that I talk about in my book where, partying too much. But we always got along. We were partners until... Ike, of course, he was one of these guys that Ralph Rogatou, he ended up in a thing one night in a match where him and I were tagged. And a guy, I took the chair, and the referee wasn't looking, and he was holding the baby face, that thing, and the baby face moved, and I hit the cheek, and he made him a little upset. The situation got a little out of hand there, but... we always got along. To this day, we see each other. We talk. You know, he's a wild man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's a very wild man. The reason why I say that is because I'm friends with him on Facebook, as well as if you go on YouTube, it's like it's gold with him, because obviously he's gotten to that point where literally, you know, he's spitting out F-bombs. He tells somebody what he thinks about, you know, was about him instantly, and, you know, he went on the Howard Stern show several times, and they do stuff to, like, trigger him, you know, and we talked about certain wrestlers from the past, like Macho Man and Hulk Hogan, et cetera, et cetera, and I was just wondering, have you seen any of his video clips, and does this look like the same Iron Sheik that you remember back in the day, or do you think it's actually age creeping in that's causing him to be more, what do you call it, the decrepit, I guess.
I think we all go through our hard times or whatever, but Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe Cosgrove was having a little problem there, maybe like I had with, I don't know if he still has or not, but I hope not. I pray that he's overcome that drugs, alcohol, and all that. But been there, done that, so it's not like I'm not going to be talking about him. I just pray that he's all right. I know he's had a personal situation in his life with his daughter passing away, and you never know how some people take things, you know, so I don't want to definitely judge him, but I got a choice of shutting it off if he comes on there. And I heard part of his couple promos talking about different guys, too much unnecessary, you know, demonic stuff, swearing, cursing, and all this stuff. To me, you know, if a man wants to act tough, you do that in the ring. You don't have to do that with your mouth and go around belittling other people in a negative way. An insulting way, really, and insult the listeners with that type of language as far as I'm concerned. That doesn't show that you're, not too much of the ball. So, Cosgrove, please, brother, clean it up, man, for your own sake. You know, we go back a long way. I refereed a match between him and Buzz Sawyer in a motel room, and old Cosgrove and I has been up and down the road and wrestled each other and wrestled together. Hate to see if he's having any problems, like, you know, but he is able to straighten up, you know, with overcome those demons like a lot of us have, you know.
Yeah, well, it brings to light. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that brings to light, though, definitely the reason why he's acting like that, because there's not that many people know he lost his daughter. Like, you know, I'm all for one, didn't know that either. So that kind of, I have to say that's an excuse. That kind of makes sense, though, to, you know, why he does what he does sometimes. Because I know when the umpire messed up that perfect game a while back, he put a video out about that umpire and said a quick little saying. I think it was like a minute and something long. And there was an F-bomb this, F-bomb that, and his favorite thing is, I'll put you in the camel crutch, and I'll do this. And he talks about what he would do, and I'll make you humble. You know, and I'm like, okay. And he's like, well, F you, and have a nice day. And I'm like, okay, you know, because it's not like, you know, something that, you're right. It's not something you should say to somebody like that. Instead, it's more.
Especially at his age, you know, you don't go talking like you're still 20, 30, 40 years old and able to do it. You know, at one time we were able to do quite a bit of stuff, but, you know, as you age, the body starts reacting to the age, you should be able to have a little wisdom and grow up a little bit to where you start changing that. I think maybe a lot of guys get in a role of, it's like an interview after a while, like, you know, like, I want to challenge everybody, intimidate everybody in case I can get a match or something. I mean, that's not the way you go about it. And to me, that's silly stuff. If you've got something to show, your ability will be noticed, and I'm sure you'll be on the stage pretty quick if you got something to show, because the promoters want to make money, and then they'll use you. So it's just sad in a way. I'm just glad that I was able to overcome it, and I don't take the credit. I give the glory to the Lord, because I really, you know, everybody's got their own beliefs, but I know one thing. My God is for real, because I ended up being a mess with drugs and alcohol. I mean, to the extent that I was going up and down the road thinking that I was tough enough to quit and do and straighten myself up, and I was powerless against it. I just, I guess, was looking for some relief, some happiness, and couldn't do it. But when Nikita, my nephew, invited me to the church, and ended up realizing through the truth of God's word that God loved me, and that he wanted something better for me, and he paved the road for me in gold. And actually, in his case, it was in blood on the cross. And I accepted that as a new chance in my life. And I'm so glad I did, because I'll be 68 here in August, and I'm going around with these injuries. But, man, just the idea of having another chance and realizing where I went wrong in the past, and it's not too late to straighten up, you know. And he's still working on me, of course, and thank God for that. You know, he says he'll never leave us or forsake us. So
I'm glad that day I made that decision. And, you know, I know for sure because that day, you know, wrestling is what it is, and we think of everything being a big work, a big big act, a big show business, everything. But that day when I received Christ in front of 3,000 people at that church, God chose to knock me off of my feet. It wasn't something that I, matter of fact, I remember saying to myself as the pastor was coming down praying to people, I remember saying, man, I'm going to disappoint this guy because I won't be going down. I could see if it was Andre the Giant, a Road Warrior Animal knocking me down, but I knew down deep it wasn't him. It was God behind him. But when he came down and I received Christ in prayer with him, immediately the Holy Spirit hit me and I went down like a ton of bricks. So I know, I mean, nobody can tell me God's not for real. That's nobody else did that to me but God. To knock me down without hurting me. Just boom, the key to cotton, matter of fact, the way down. And I felt warm all over. I realized what God was telling me was, man, I'm for real. My word is for real. I died for you. I love you. And I want you to straighten up. And man, from that day on, it's still a journey for me. I'm still growing in the Lord and don't profess to be perfect, but I reach out there to other people just to tell them that, hey, a lot of people listen because they know that I'm not talking from textbook. I'm talking or from the Bible. I'm talking from my heart. Dude. I've been there, done that. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. And I pray every day for my brothers and my sisters in the business of wrestling. And whether they've accepted the Lord or not, I pray that they will accept the Lord and be a child of God and that I'd be able to walk the streets of gold one day with them. And that's what God promised you, is have a mansion in heaven. And I believe that. I believe that with all my heart. And I believe that my mind is more sound now than it's ever been because it's clean of any drugs and alcohol. And I pray for all the fans and thank them for supporting the wrestling and tell them that our God is so good that he takes that bad and turns it into good. So don't feel bad about yourself. Don't feel guilty. Don't believe the lies of the enemy. Just trust in him. Get into his word. He is his word, the Bible. And he will fill you with his love. And you'll be able to go out and say the same thing and do the same thing. And but today I'm so proud of the fact that I'm just a small, humble ministry. But each day I go out, whether it's on the street or where, people know that I'm a Christian. And I love God. And that I want them to come to them. I don't try to push it on them or anything like that. But if they'd like to, for example, get married, they need an officiant down North Carolina, South Carolina, the beach wedding or whatever they'd like. I'm available. Go to IvanKolov.com. Pick up my book, Is That Wrestling Fake? Through CrowbarPress.com. That's Scott Teal's. Or you can go to my site, IvanKolov, and click on where it says the book. And or if you want to get an autographed picture, you know, send me a few bucks, help my ministry. It would be appreciated. It would be appreciated. I really appreciate you guys, too, just taking time to recognize us old-timers and have a program that you have as, you know, going out there and touching the people that still love wrestling and that maybe remember some of us old fellers and that really appreciated the days that we went up and down the road and that you just honor us now by having us on like this. Thank you so much, brother.
Hey, not a problem. I really appreciate you giving us your time. Once again, this is Attitude Wrestling Radio, and our special guest, Ivan Koloff. Yeah, I was reading, obviously, your Wikipedia page that says that you became a born-again Christian in 1995, and you traveled to churches to share your testimony. And that's really, really good. I mean, especially from all those, you know, that are out there that really need spiritual guidance, you know, being a Christian myself. I mean, it's definitely something that is good, you know, to know that there's, you know, somebody out there that you can touch and make a difference in their life, and that's really, really great. Well, I really appreciate your time, and hopefully somewhere down the line, you know, you guys are the ones that pave the way for us up-and-coming wrestlers and independent wrestlers, and you know, we're hoping that you guys will still be around. So obviously, if we need to go through advice, we can get it from. And you know, we hope you keep doing what you're doing. And so we appreciate your time. And You have a good one, sir.
Yep. Honored to do it. And, we'll be at the Fan Fest in Charlotte, of course, the first weekend of August, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and besides 50, 60 other old-time wrestlers, you'll get a chance at something like Vince McMahon's Hall of Fame thing. It's a Hall of Heroes there. Come on down, and anybody in this area that receives this message or any place like to travel, I think it'd be worth your time, man. I've been to about half a dozen of them now and meet some of my old friends. And just to shake the hands of the fans, it gives us joy. Thank you again, brother.
All right, no problem. I appreciate your time, sir. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
That was the one, the only, the legendary Ivan Koloff.
Yeah, that was very, very well-spoken gentleman right there, I tell you. It's kind of amazing that he's been dropped on his head all these years, and he gets to speak so well. You know, that's pretty neat. That's kind of cool to see that yeah, he was obviously back in the 60s and 70s heyday, and, you know, to be in matches with Stan Hansen and Pedro Morales and Bruno Sammartino. And he mentioned, obviously, Animal and Andre the Giant, Dick Murdoch. I mean, you know, it's incredible, you know. And plus, taking on the late, great Haystack Calhoun. I mean, for a man who was the size of Yokozuna, except for 6'4", I mean, it's just incredible what this man has you know, been through. And what a career, huh? That's definitely something that my career can be half of that. That'd be great.
Exactly. And, we both know that there's not many wrestlers that's been around that long that is actually still around. Most of them passed away, unfortunately. So we are very proud and very honored to have him on our show tonight.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely, I would say, one of my favorites, moved up there to the top, you know, because, you know, this guy was full of, obviously, stuff to say, and, you know, I'm glad he, you know, he shared us with his wisdom. And, you know, I thought I'd throw the Iron Sheik in there because obviously the list on there that he's crossed paths with him and having Nikolai Volkov as tag team partner. Clearly, you know, I'm sure that he's talked to Iron Sheik and being with him, and sure enough, you know, that's just incredible. Now, before we leave the show, I also wanted to talk about the WWE, what happened this past Monday.
Before we get to that, we actually got a couple emails.
Okay, shoot.
Before I get to the emails, you're listening to Attitude Wrestling Radio, presented by Pro Wrestling Radio, or Pro Wrestling Live, sorry, I keep getting mixed up, I don't know why. And also you can find Pro Wrestling Live information up their huge upcoming show at ProWrestlingLive.net, and we're going to try and get Jimmy Rave to come on a show in a couple weeks time, so we can get a rundown with him, because he's the guy that actually books for that company, and he's the one, and he's also wrestling for that company, so we'll try and get him on. With one of the emails, it said, what is up with NXT? Is Bryan Danielson gone? Yeah, no offense, you're a little behind, but yeah, he's been gone for what, a month now? Close to that?
Yeah, he's been gone, what, a couple of weeks now, if not longer?
I think about 3 to 4 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's chance or somebody, I read somewhere that there was, like, people trying to flesh for him to come back or something like that, even though he was going to be making appearances at certain places. I mean, maybe that's just something that, speculation, you know, something that I heard through the grapevine. But that's just what I heard, that, you know, it's all speculation. There's no certainty they're going to bring him back. Then again, you know, what if he's the Raw general manager? What if it revealed to be him? I mean, it could be. You never know.
I think what's going to happen is that he's going to try and pick him up as soon as his 90-day clause is up, which is being about 2 months, I would say roughly 2 months' time.
Okay, what's the next email?
Next email is, we've already actually touched on this one, but the person asked, it says, I'm not stupid. I know the new general manager isn't Stone Cold, but why do they have to, A, do that stupid, annoying noise when every time there's a supposedly email? And why is it this week that the lights are going on and off? Does it mean that Undertaker's a general manager? Not at all.
Yeah, the reason why the lights flicker, I guess that's just to get them to stop wrestling in the ring or whatever they're doing. That's just something that's new, because apparently they didn't do that the previous weeks, whenever this laptop came out, so.
And to be honest with you guys, I probably said this last week or 2 weeks ago, but well, the first time they had the laptop out, it wasn't even a real email. The reason why I know, it's because, you know when you put your email in, and then it says what email you want to send it to, and the subject, well, those were totally blank. And it looked like Michael Cole was going to send that message out. Just the way it looked, because I had a very close look on the laptop.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Michael Cole looks more and more... I know you threw out there that you think Michael Cole is the general manager, but I don't know if that's actually him or not. So, could be a chance, but it's just the way he's been reading, the way he acts. You know, it could be. I mean, like I said, but there's got to be a logical explanation on who's doing this, and I really hope they hurry up and do this.
Same here. I can't see in a way him being a general manager, because if he is, say he is, who the hell would take his place as the announcer with Jerry the King Lawler? Like, are they going to bring Jim Ross back?
Well, apparently not, because his condition won't allow him on TV. Maybe, you know, because you remember the first time he had problems with his palsy or whatever they call it, they took him off TV, because apparently one side of his face, he can't, you know, the muscle isn't, like, staying up, so it's, like, sagging down, you know, like it's melting or something. It happened back when he used to come out with Dr. Dusty Williams, you know, when he was in WWE. So maybe that's why they haven't had him on television lately, you know? So maybe that's it. But apparently, you know, he's talking TNA, but I think he's loyal to WWE and he probably wouldn't go anywhere unless, you know, things get back to normal and they take him out of there.
Yeah, I actually seen a picture of Jim Ross recently after his Bell's palsy, and he looks worse than before. Like, unfortunately, before he had a bat, like, you can definitely tell, but this is, like, something new. Like, you can really tell that he had it.
Okay, any more emails, or is that it?
That's it.
Oh, okay. Well, so, yeah. Now, can we go on to WWE, what happened this past Monday?
Sure, shoot, go ahead.
Okay, well, obviously, what did you think about the ending of Brawl and how that worked out? John Cena going off like he did, and then eventually, you know, beating the crud out of that Nexus member.
No offense, but I don't think it was good, just because I don't like Nexus, and I can't stand John Cena. The only one I actually like out of Nexus is Skip Sheffield. The rest of them, they bring nothing to the table. I don't even think Wade Barrett brings anything to the table, and John Cena, everybody knows I don't like him.
Yeah, Yeah, but obviously, you know, like I said, he is the face of WWE. You know, it's not Triple H, it's not The Undertaker, it's John Cena right now for whatever reason, whether it be Vince or it be Stephanie, whether it be just the WWE Nation. I mean, I don't know. I just know that when he got done beating that boy and threw him over the announcer table and flipped him on top of him, even though he didn't land on top of him because he slid right at the bottom, when he got in there and raised those fingers up, the crowd erupted. So obviously they loved what he did. And just to see him shake severely like that, veins popping out of his arms and his neck, I mean, the boy meant business. So, you know, I really look forward to that match coming up next week. And like I said, if he's smart, because obviously 6-on-1 handicap match isn't going to go. If I was him from the beginning of the show, leading up to the main event, I would take out each one of the Nexus members, because eventually they got to be alone going to make a phone call, change into the locker room. You know, you knock out 5 of them and just leave him and Wade Barrett at the very end and going 1-on-1. I can see that happening, and I can see John Cena, you know, eventually making this boy tap. Or just give him a major, serious attitude adjustment. One of the two.
Yeah, I can see him taking out one at a time before the end. But to get back a little earlier with your question, if it was good. Personally, obviously, I just said I don't like neither of any of the guys that are involved, like John Cena and the Nexus. But I think it was pretty decent, but where did he go from here? Like, you know what I mean? Like, after, say, John Cena beats the hell out of Wade Barrett or vice versa, where do they go after? Like, do they attack, does Nexus attack people from, wrestlers from SmackDown? Do they just stay on Raw and attack all the wrestlers? Or, like, where do you think they're going to go with this after this Monday?
Well, clearly, even if John Cena does do what I predict, Nexus will try to make a comeback or try to get revenge, one of the two. Maybe the general manager might actually say, no, you didn't do what I say. I didn't say 1-on-1. I said 6-on-1. So it might bump it up and make it a little bit more interesting, make it into a cage match. It might make it into maybe something that's going to be done on Money in the Bank. I mean, he could actually take out John Cena out of the, you know, title picture and put him strictly in a match with Nexus. I mean, you never know. This guy could go either way, you know, with this. And considering how R-Truth got taken out of the Money in the Bank match, they haven't mentioned who they're going to replace him with, thanks to The Miz taking him out. Then you got 2 SmackDown stars who haven't been announced yet going to be in the Money in the Bank match on their brand. So there's all kinds of possibilities and scenarios that can eventually happen that you just don't know. I mean, it surprises me that none of the Nexus have made, even though they haven't messed with a single match yet, that they haven't, you know, been put into the scenario of being part of the Money in the Bank.
Yeah, exactly. Going on SmackDown here, does anybody really know who really attacked Undertaker? Because at first the rumors were Straight Edge Society, but it actually wasn't them.
No, well, obviously it wasn't Straight Edge Society. So with that being said, who can it be? I'm not sure. There was a rumor going on throughout the internet that obviously they were going to probably reunite, you know, the old feud between brother versus brother that it turned out to be Kane, but they haven't, you know, made that indication yet, because clearly what's going on with Kane and his feud with Rey Mysterio, so you just don't know if that's the way they're going to go, or, you know, they even said that they're not going to put Nexus, they're not going to have Nexus do any run-ins on SmackDown. So if that's the case, clearly that wouldn't make sense to say they did it. So it could be anybody, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do our section again. before we let this show die for the week, give me one of your yays for this week. Something positive that happened.
Something positive that happened. Well, that would be... Jeff Hardy beating Abyss in the title, or in the main event. That was kind of cool to see. Because obviously Jeff Hardy, you know, gets, you know, wind up pretty well. He, you know, screams out, you know, that this is going down, but you think, really? Because, you know, this and him has had matches back and forth before, and of course everybody remembers Jeff trying to jump off the top of the Titantron, you know, in TNA, and this moving out of the way, and eventually this getting a pin. So seeing something like that occur was kind of like, okay, wow, you know, this sets up something definite for the Ricky Rowe coming up, and how that's going to, turn out.
Right, right. What's your nay for the week?
This general manager thing still. I mean, obviously, you know, with him, you know, saying, I mean, it was kind of cool that he finally lifted off this stupid little band that, you know, you can't touch any of the Nexus wrestlers. That was awesome. But the fact that, you know, they wouldn't let them go at it, and then all of a sudden, if anybody doesn't do what I say, that, you know, things are going to happen, and then to put that on John Cena and cause them to, you know, like I said, to have this handicap match, I would say that's definitely a nay. Because Undertaker, you know, you name it, anybody cannot take six individuals on, especially who, you know, appear to be trying to make a statement, and plus like are a bunch of, you know, pack of wolves.
Exactly. I'm going to go my yeas and nays in a second, but we actually, I got an email. This will be the last email we asked for tonight. It says, with this whole NXT 6-on-1 and other things with Randy Orton and Evan Bourne and other wrestlers coming in, can you see this happening? This happening until Survivor Series, so they can have like a 6-on-6 elimination match? Okay, personally, I can't see it have them having it that long.
Yeah, they have, that might be the case. I mean, I think that Triple H is going to be back sooner or later. And obviously, you got to have somebody, because Cena can't take on, you know, all seven of them at once. So I think that they're going to eventually have Triple H come back and maybe line them up with Cena. Orton, don't know if you can trust, but, you know, I don't know if Orton and Triple H can be on the same Survivor Series team. And, I mean, who else do you really got? So for maybe Cole or Mark Henry and MVP, I mean, don't know if those guys will do it for you. So could go either way.
Exactly. My yeas for the week... My yay for the week is not seeing Triple H. My nay of the week is same as you, the general manager. That's getting retarded.
Yeah. Obviously, this manager is trying to make a statement, but if this manager really had the balls, you know, he would step out, quit hiding behind the stupid IMs, and, you know, show who you are. Quit, you know, wanting to be, you know, be anonymous, all that other crap. I mean, that's not going to work. I mean, you want to see who you're dealing with. That's like saying, okay, I can date you. That's the girl saying, all right, I'll date you, and I'll go out to the movie with you, walk the mall with you, but, you know, you can't be in public. You know, that doesn't make no sense. You can't have it like that. You got to, you know, you got to come on out, let people see what you got. But as far as you know, you could be talking to a female. That's another thing. That could be actually Stephanie McMahon typing this stuff, but she could actually be the general manager.
Oh, don't tell me that, please.
I mean, it could be the case, you know. Even though she's got three kids she's dealing with, but Linda's obviously available to watch them. So, you know, I mean, wouldn't it be great for Shane McMahon to get back in the fold? Because I'm sure he can get back in there if he wanted to. I mean, that could be another scenario. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that you can see unfolding, but you don't know which way it's going to go.
Exactly. We're going to let everybody go. I want to thank everybody. First thing is my co-host, as always, Darren. I want to thank Ivan Koloff, our huge special guest. And I want to thank Pro Wrestling Live for making this happen. And also, Pro Wrestling Live will have a show on August 7th. It will feature... Hold on here, I'll get the information here. Sorry about that, guys. Okay. That's what I want. Nope. My computer's acting a little weird. Where are you? Events. There you go. Pro Wrestling Live's show is Saturday, August 7th, 2010. The show is called The Rising. Bell time is 3 p.m. at Long Island Elks Lodge, 150 Garfield Avenue, Long Island Branch, New Jersey. The wrestlers will be there is Paul Burchill, former WWE star. Who else here? Sorry, my computer's a little slow here. Paul Burchill will be, some of the names is Paul Burchill, Jimmy Rave, former TNA star, former Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor star Davey Richards, and former WWE star Ken Doan, and former TNA star Sanjay Dutt. And for more information about the show or any other shows that they're coming up with, please go to prowrestlinglive.net. Darren, I'd like to thank you again, man.
Hey, my pleasure. And I can't wait to do it next week.
And for all of us at Pro Wrestling Live and Attitude Wrestling Radio, good night and have a good week. Brother!